In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Yeah.
Let's all go to the
lobby. Time for us to talk movies. Alan Adams of The Main Edge joining us for Pass the Popcorn. Good afternoon, sir.
And good afternoon to you. How's it going?
It's going very well, thank you. Hope you had a nice weekend and all that. But I have to tell you, man, I just absolutely loved your work and everybody's work in the Penobscot Theater, a virtual show, Flying Solo. That was just an incredible piece of theater.
Well, thanks so much, man. I really appreciate it. I'm really proud of the work that we've all done. And, you know, it's always interesting to, when you work on something like this, to finally sort of put it out there into the world. Because, again, there's a lot of very personal stuff that we're sharing in these stories, it's not all laughs and, you know, sunshine. Like there's some sadness, there's some hurt, but I mean, I think everybody really gave a really honest performance. And I think that's the key for something like this, is for things to feel genuine, like they're coming from a place of reality. I think everybody has done a wonderful job at telling these stories.
Well, I was moved by it, and you know, I'm sure it helped that I knew most of you, but even the gentleman that I didn't know, and his story, it was great as well, and it was just terrific. And I'm looking forward to watching the other group. What is it, the Touchdown group, or was that your group?
Right. Yes, we were Takeoff, and the other group is Touchdown. So. Yeah, and again, they're a wonderful group as well. Although, you know, maybe not as wonderful as us.
Well, how could they be? Let's be honest. But no, it was something else, and we enjoyed it an awful lot. And I tip my cap to you, because, you know, like you said, people were exposing some pretty raw nerves there, and that to me, that just made it that much more powerful.
Yeah, it was. It's one of those things where. You try to do your best to do right by your own story. And, you know, and we all struggled at times with just what we were sharing and how much of ourselves we were exposing. But ultimately, I think it paid off in work that I think was across the board really pretty strong.
That's awesome. All right, let's talk movies. You saw three and, some high-powered names there in these films.
For sure, yeah. Where would you like to start? Do you have any preferences, or should we just fire away?
You anywhere you want to go, I'll go with you.
Okay. Well, let's start with probably the quietest of these movies. We watched this movie called The Dig. It's directed by Simon Stone, based the screenplay by Moira Buffini, and it's adapted from a novel by John Preston of the same name. Based on true events, it's a story of a woman in the years in like 1939, the British countryside, immediately before England enters into World War II, wanting to sort of do an archaeological dig on her property. There are a series of mounds in their fields that they believe. May have some sort of archaeological significance, though most of the museums and folks that she has contacted are less than forthcoming with regards to how they feel about the thing. It's interesting. It's a movie about connecting to the past in a way to understand the present, which frankly is, it's a universal theme all across history, but I feel like particularly now, that idea of recognizing that, past events do impact our present, I think is very important. The woman's name is Edith Pretty, played by Carey Mulligan, who's wonderful. She's a widow living in Suffolk with her young son, Robert, and she wants to find out what's going on underneath these mounds. The museums blow her off, so she enlists a self-taught amateur excavator, by the name of Basil Brown, played by, I'll call him Ralph Fiennes, but his name is Ralph. And she brings him in to lead the effort. She gets a couple of hired hands to help him out, as well as her cousin, a guy by the name of Rory, played by Johnny Flynn, who's about to be called up to the Royal Air Force ahead of hostilities. So they get after the task and start digging. Mr. Brown starts to think pretty early on that there's more here than meets the eye, but he also is, at least initially, dismissed out of hand by the more academic types. But then it turns out that there actually might be something of great historical import in these digs. And so the previously uninterested museums sort of force themselves back into the picture. And, you know, the muckety-mucks, the Cambridge archaeologists, and, you know, and a large team shows up to sort of take over the site. All the while, the connection between Mr. Brown and the Pretty family very quietly sort of grows, even as Mrs. Pretty's health deteriorates. But, you know, and then questions start arising about who owns what, you know, and where it goes, and who gets credited with discovering it, and all the efforts made to that end. And it turns out that there are ramifications to that sort of thing, big ones and small ones, that will wind up altering the course of a number of lives. Look, this isn't a flashy movie. Like, it's not aggressive. It's not loud. It's very restrained, very unassuming. You know, it's quiet. It's a quiet movie driven by quiet relationships and a frankly kind of square affectation, affection for historical record. But underneath all that sort of that stead veneer, like, all these people, you know, they're culturally driven towards a kind of quietude, but they have their own passions, and they move them in ways that are just as meaningful as those that are sort of offered up by people with much more fiery dispositions. It's a really lovely movie to look at. Like, the director really lingers on some of these images, like embracing the beauty of the English countryside, you know, which, you know, and that beauty is just as understated as the attitudes of the character. Like, it's, you know, there's nothing flashy about the English countryside, but it really is lovely. And the director really uses it as sort of another way to convey the dignity of the people, you know, and using it also to sort of counterpoint the uncertainty of the era in which they're living. And it's really interesting because so much of this film feels very traditional, almost fusty, like it's, you know, very buttoned down. And yet there's one particular stylistic choice that is really interesting. There's this pronounced tendency to sort of set those striking images, the landscape, these wide shots of people in fields or whatnot, juxtaposing that with dialogue that's being spoken by characters who aren't necessarily in the scene or at the moment, like in other times and places. So there are multiple scenes where the dialogue and the images are telling different parts of the same story. And so, like, even when there are characters on screen whose voices we're hearing, we're not always watching them speak. It's kind of odd when you first notice it, but it really quickly fades into the fabric of the storytelling in a way that's really, like, it's really intriguing. It's a really bold choice, one that I don't know necessarily fully works, but I sort of applaud the ambition of making it. And again, you know, the quietness of the story does extend into the performances. Fiennes does a wonderful job of sort of evoking the humility of working class roots, while also conveying his passion for, you know, unearthing and preserving this brand of history. Kerry Mulligan, who's incredibly talented, and I anticipate she will be walking away with some hardware sometime not too far from now. Maybe not this year, but soon. Like, she's really talented. She's great here. These kinds of roles have a tendency to be kind of thin and predictable, but she does a really good job of sort of fighting against that, kind of blending that sadness and steeliness. You know, and the supporting turns are all solid. There are some really great performances. Lily James and Ben Chaplin show up later in the film as a sort of married couple that turn up to work on the excavation. It's funny because, frankly, they're entire subplot could probably be just removed from the movie and we'd be none the wiser, but they're both very good, so it's nice to have them here. It's well executed. I would call it costume drama. It's not quite as sumptuous as like that sort of Merchant Ivory kind of vibe that you think when you hear the term costume drama. But it's a movie. It speaks low and it moves slow. It's subtle, judicious with its charms. And again, it won't be everyone's cup of tea, but if it is yours, you'll probably dig the dig.
All right. Fantastic. What's next?
Let's talk about Palmer. I'm on record as being a huge admirer of the sort of legendary triple threat singer, dancer, actor type of person. And we usually foist that term on stage actors, specifically Broadway types, but it really can be applied across the board to the performing talents. But one of the things that I always think about is something has to be third. Like, no one is equally gifted at all three of those things. You can be good and even great at all of them, but one has to come in last. And that brings us to the star of Palmer, Justin Timberlake, who is, I believe, a performer of immense ability across the performing spectrum. But I also believe, I feel very comfortable saying that for him, acting is definitely third on that list. There's no shame in that. Like I think he's immensely talented across the board. But he's a better singer and a better dancer than he is an actor. That said, I watch him in this movie, and I wonder, like, not enough to like change my mind, but that's more because of the extremity of his other talents rather than any shortcomings here. Like, it's the sort of serious role we haven't seen him take on in a very long time, and he's never done anything quite like this. So it's easy to forget that he's a talented performer. Like, we haven't seen him live on screen in 4 years. Like, the last thing he did was that Woody Allen movie in 2017,
right.
Wonder Wheel, I think it was called. This one, it's directed by Fisher Stevens, which was a name I hadn't heard for a while.
Yeah.
But he's been working behind the camera a good deal more in recent years. The screenplay is by a woman named Cheryl Guerrero. The movie really pushes our man JT toward a darkness that we just haven't seen from him before. Like, again, this is a heartfelt story of redemption and acceptance, but it goes to some kind of morally murky places, and it's pretty bold about venturing into unpleasant territory. It's the kind of movie, it's about responsibility and about protecting those who need to be protected, and how that instinct can grow into something more, as well as what it means when someone who has lost everything gets a chance at some sort of redemption. Timberlake plays Eddie Palmer. He's a former, a legendary high school football star whose life went awry. He's been gone for a long time. He spent 12 years in prison for crimes that are only gradually sort of revealed to us over the course of the movie. He's back in his small Louisiana hometown to try to pick up the pieces of his life. He moves in with his grandmother, a woman named Vivian, played by the always wonderful June Squibb, and starts looking for a job. Like, all he wants is to keep his nose clean and figure his stuff out. But those plans are complicated by the neighbors. A woman named Shelley, played by Juno Temple, lives in a camper on Vivian's property. She's a woman who's struggling with substance abuse issues and has a tendency to make some pretty poor choices with regards to the men in her life. Has a tendency to disappear for days at a time. However, she also has a young son, a young man by the name of Sam, who gets left behind on these sorts of disappearing, benders or whatever. And so Sam winds up staying with Vivian, and hence now with Palmer. Now, initially, the kid. It's a kid named Ryder Allen plays the part. It's his first movie. And he's spectacular. Like, he's just a delight. He's a flamboyant kid. I think that's the best way to describe him. And initially, Palmer is put off by that flamboyance. This is a kid who, plays with dolls, and like, his favorite show is this princess themed cartoon show. But it's not long before the kid's really thoughtful sensitivity and remarkable positivity starts to grow on Palmer. He winds up getting a job as a janitor at the local elementary school, whereas, you know, he starts to see the way that Sam gets mistreated by some of the kids, although some of the, no, he also has plenty of friends, including the daughter of one of Palmer's old buddies. He also meets Maggie, who is Sam's teacher, who they initially connect over shared concern for the boy, but it starts to turn into something more. But the reality of small-town life is it's hard to escape your past, particularly when you're surrounded by it. His criminal misdeeds loom large over everything else, which leaves him tiptoeing around the edges while trying to do his best to look after this boy and wondering what happens when or if his mom returns. And as much as he wants to protect him, circumstances conspire to make that very complicated. Look, real talk, I wasn't sure I was going to like this movie. It's a real departure for Timberlake, and the potential for some really, like, syrupy, like, saccharine kind of predictability, that sort of button-pushing in service to provoking, like, emotional reactions that the movie doesn't earn. But really, it's actually surprisingly genuine and kind of moving. Like, there's plenty of heartstring tugging going on. But the relationships are built on what feels like a solid foundation, and we get this wonderful sense of just how hard it is to be different and how many different ways there are to be different, as well as how important it is to have people who support us without condition or hesitation. And again, there's a sort of baked-in inclusivity message here that I think is very important. A movie like this, it comes down to the performances. Like I said, I believe in Timberlake's talents, but I was not at all sure he had it in him to tackle something this heavy. But he is. Like, it's a nuanced and thoughtful turn. Like, he's, like, the idea of starting over when surrounded by people who knew you when you were at the top, like, and who know why you fell to the bottom, that's a really complicated and difficult sort of, you know, way path to navigate. But he does a really good job at sort of bringing that forward. And like I said, like, the boy, Ryder Allen, just a delight, like, spirited and cheerful. Like, there's this wonderful, charming sort of precociousness about him. And he definitely hangs, like, you know, he's got scenes with, you know, June Squibb and Justin Timberlake and, you know, all these people, and he's holding his own. And again, we've talked about this before, but I remain convinced that we are firmly in the middle of the golden age of child actors right now. And this is just another example of how good some of these kids can be. And supporting cast is great as well. Some wonderful, wonderful performances across the board. Yeah, it's, you know, it's sweet, sad, quietly funny. But, you know, the great performances and an unexpected amount of sincerity, like, it earns the sort of peaks and valleys of the emotional roller coaster. It doesn't quite reach greatness, but it's plenty good.
Excellent. All right, and finally, tell us about The Little Things.
Well, you know I love me some Denzel, Rich.
Oh, yeah, who doesn't?
Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, it's funny. Like, one of the things that always comes to mind when I'm watching a Denzel Washington performance is, like, man, remember Movie Stars? Remember when we had those? Because we don't really anymore. Like, it's a scant handful at this point of people that you could really just be like, capital M, capital S, movie star. And Denzel is one of them. And, you know, and I don't mean that to say everything he makes is automatically some sort of commercial or critical success. Like, he can usually open a movie, well, as much as anyone outside of, you know, blockbuster IP sequel town can. And he's almost always good. But the films themselves are a little inconsistent. Now, The Little Things, it's a Warner Brothers joint, so it's currently in theaters and available on HBO Max, is a prime example of that sort of variability. It's a period crime thriller, although I must say, calling a movie set in 1990 a period movie hurts me inside a little bit.
Oh, you and me both.
You know, 1990 is 30 years ago now. Like, that's where we're at.
Ouch.
But, you know, it's a period crime thriller, which is like red meat for someone like Denzel. And he's got a couple of Oscar-winning co-stars. Like, Rami Malek is in this movie. Jared Leto is in this movie. It certainly looks like a formula for full-on success. But it's an interesting thing because the movie is written and directed by John Lee Hancock. And the director did an admirable job bringing forth good performances and evoking the atmosphere that you need for this sort of neo-noir. Unfortunately, the screenwriter failed to rise to the occasion. You know, it's formulaic, disjointed, a little derivative. For me, the pros like outweigh the cons, but like, you know, your mileage may vary. So Denzel plays Joe Deacon. He's a deputy sheriff in Kern County, California. Solitary guy, keeps to himself when he's not on the job. But that quietude is sort of disrupted when he's sent to L.A. to get a piece of evidence for an upcoming trial. This is when we learn that Deke has a history with the L.A. Sheriff's Department. Specifically, up until a few years ago, he was a decorated detective before leaving the department after a breakdown. Now, he notes that a serial murder case that's ongoing, currently being handled by a hotshot young detective named Jimmy Baxter, that's Rami Malek, bears some similarities to an old unsolved case of his own. They're initially leery of one another, but they kind of find their way into an uneasy alliance in hopes of bringing the murderer to justice. But it's when they land on a suspect, an undeniably creepy appliance repairman named Albert Sparma, and that's Jared Leto. Things start to spiral. They zero in on they have a focus for their investigation, and he sure seems like he's guilty, but maybe he's not. Like, it's tough to find any hard evidence, and while Sparma is clearly enjoying sort of the cat-and-mouse aspect of it all, you know, it still kind of falls into the category of really weird but not criminal behavior. So our two heroes, Deacon and Baxter, start to push against, and occasionally through, the boundaries of legality in their determination to make this case. But you start to question, well, how far is too far? Will they cross a line? You know, Deacon's already lost it all, but Baxter's got a family and a career. Like, is he willing to risk everything for this? And all throughout, you've got Deacon sort of battling his own demons, sort of locked in on those past failures and determined to make amends. But it turns, you know, it's one of those things where in situations like this, you know, justice may just not be possible. Not anymore. Now, look, The Little Things could have been an extremely good movie. It should have been, really. Like, all the pieces are there. Like, it's a neo-noir crime movie starring Denzel Washington. I mean, right there, like, the floor you've established is really high. Like, it would be very hard for this movie to be bad. And it's not. Like, it's good. It just never quite reaches the heights that you might expect. Again, director John Lee Hancock does a great job of capturing the appropriate aesthetic energy. There's a griminess to it that really looks, you know, sort of juxtaposed against moments of aspirational brightness, but it really wallows in the shadows, and it really looks at best when it gets seedy. However, screenwriter John Lee Hancock never gets his crap together. We've seen these sorts of old-school, new-school, redemptive cop stories like a million times, and there are maybe new and novel ways to tell those stories, but you will not find those new ways here. It follows the formula, but never really breathes any life into it. And you get this, so you get this narrative that feels weirdly inert, despite the, you know, ostensible stakes and occasional, like, kind of hard to take leaps. The urgency gets muddled, and it's the pacing's a little disjointed. I say that, but despite those script issues, we do get some really strong performances. Now, look, no one's going to confuse this with Denzel's best work, but he has just an undeniable knack for playing this sort of broken man, like a decent person whose goodness comes with this peeping helping of flawed ambiguity. And he's just so effortlessly charismatic. Like, it's not flashy, but it's very magnetic, and he's so much fun to watch. Even though, frankly, like, he never really even takes it out of third gear, but he doesn't have to, because he's Denzel Washington. Rami Malek is good. There's a weird, like, discomfort that's running through his performance. There are spots where it kind of comes off like he's maybe not as confident in his choices as you'd like, although that could be a directorial choice as well. Like, it's tough to say, but he mostly makes it work. Then you've got Jared Leto, who there's something self-conscious in everything that Leto does. A self-awareness, you know, that's the sense that he wants you to know how hard he's working. You know, and so you get this performance that's undeniably creepy, but also, like, fundamentally performative. Like, it feels forced and a little false. But you know, he's certainly memorable. And I mean, God knows he fits into this thing as well as anybody else does. Again, like I said, the little things isn't bad. It's the Denzel floor we were talking about. Like, even when he's, you know, sort of, you know, going along at 65-70%, like, he's good enough to ensure that you get a watchable movie. And there are other things in its favor to make it worth watching as well. It's just really too bad that we don't get to see the movie that this should have been, like a movie with a script that matched sort of the quality of all the other pieces. So yeah, the little things. I'm glad I watched it, but again, your mileage may vary.
All right. Alan Adams filling us in here on Pass the Popcorn. Thank you as always, Al. Appreciate it, and we'll visit with you Wednesday.
Yeah, we'll talk on Wednesday, man.